Chapter 38.
"Do you guys see this?" I whispered. There was no reply. "Hello? H? Artemis? Shoto? Are you guys still there?" Still no reply.
Either Og had cut their voice links to me, or Halliday had coded this final stage of the gate so that no outside communication was possible. I was pretty sure it was the latter. I stood there in silence for a minute, unsure of what to do. Then, I followed my first instinct and walked over to the Atari 2600. It was hooked up to a 1977 Zenith color TV. I turned on the TV, but nothing happened. Then, I switched on the Atari. Still, nothing. There was no power, even though both the TV and the Atari were plugged into electrical outlets set into the floor. I tried the Apple II on the table beside it. It wouldn't switch on either. After a few minutes of experimentation, I discovered that the only computer that would power on was one of the oldest, the MSI 8080, the same model of computer Matthew Broderick owned in War Games. When I booted it up, the screen was completely blank, save for one word: login. I typed in Anorak and hit enter. Identification not recognized. Connection terminated. Then the computer shut itself off, and I had to power it back on to get the login prompt again. I tried Halliday. No dice. In War Games, the backdoor password that had granted access to the Whopper supercomputer was Joshua. Professor Falcon, the creator of the Whopper, had used the name of his son for the password, the person he'd loved most in the world. I typed in Og. It didn't work. Ogden didn't work either. I typed in Kira and hit the enter key. Identification not recognized. Connection terminated. I tried each of his parents' first names. I tried Zaphod, the name of his pet fish. Then Tiberius, the name of a ferret he'd once owned. None of them worked. I checked the time. I'd been in this room for over 10 minutes now, which meant that Sorrento had caught up with me. So he would now be inside his own separate copy of this room, probably with a team of Halliday scholars whispering suggestions in his ear thanks to his hacked immersion rig. They were probably already working from a prioritized list of possibilities, entering them as fast as Sorrento could type. I was out of time. I clenched my teeth in frustration. I had no idea what to try next. Then, I remembered a line from Ogden Morrow's biography. "The opposite sex made Jim extremely nervous, and Kira was the only girl that I ever saw him speak to in a relaxed manner. But even then, it was only in character, as Anorak, during the course of our gaming sessions, and he would only address her as Lucosia, the name of her D&D character." I rebooted the computer again. When the login prompt reappeared, I typed in Lucosia. Then I hit the enter key. Every system in the room powered itself on. The sounds of whirring disk drives, self-test beeps, and other boot-up sounds echoed off the vaulted ceiling. I ran back over to the Atari 2600 and searched through the giant rack of alphabetized game cartridges beside it until I found the one I was looking for. Adventure. I shoved it into the Atari and turned the system on, then hit the reset switch to start the game. It took me only a few minutes to reach the secret room. I grabbed the sword and used it to slay all three of the dragons. Then I found the black key, opened the gates of the black castle, and ventured into its labyrinth. The gray dot was hidden right where it was supposed to be. I picked it up and carried it back across the tiny 8-bit kingdom, then used it to pass through the magic barrier and enter the secret room.
But unlike the original Atari game, this secret room didn't contain the name of Warren Robinette, Adventure's original programmer. Instead, at the very center of the screen, there was a large, white oval with pixelated edges. An egg. The egg.